I think it's rather fitting that I'm talking to you a mere 2 days before the premiere of Daisy Jones and the Six.
Right.
You know, I did my homework. I did my homework on you a little bit. So I know that the book is, alongside Almost Famous, was very heavily influential in your career path.
Yes, it has.
Almost Famous. I don't know the other one, but Almost Famous, one of my favorite movies ever.
Yes, it's definitely my top favorite. That's what started everything for me. That's when I'd always known I wanted to be a writer since I was like 11 or 12, but I didn't know what kind of writer I wanted to be for a long time. And when I was 17, I watched Almost Famous, and I was just like, okay, I figured it out. That's the kind of writer now that I want to be, because I've always loved music. And the second I watched Almost Famous, I was like, so I can combine my passion for music and my passion for writing into one and just write about music.
Right.
That's what I want to do.
You said you were 17 when you saw that. I mean, like, I'm really dating myself here. I was 30 when that movie came out.
I was around 3 years old when that came out, and I did not know anything about that movie until I was in high school, and I saw that it was on Netflix one day. So I was just like, I'm just going to check this out. And I ended up loving it. It's been my favorite movie ever since. And like I said, that's where everything started for me.
When it first came out, I remember going to see it, and I saw it two nights in a row. I loved it so much the first night. And then I told my friends about it. I was like, you got to see this, right? It was like 2000. Like, if I'm not mistaken, it was the fall of 2000. And I remember on opening night, you know, like with movies with cult followings, you usually have to develop a period of years before it develops that cult following over time. Almost Famous, for whatever reason, was an event. I remember hearing about Almost Famous for almost like the entire summer before it came out. And it was directly it was kind of indirectly based on Cameron Crowe and the whole story. But I remember going into the theater and they were giving out these pins. These black pins that said Almost Famous on it, and kind of like that chicken scratch handwriting.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, I remember getting the pin, and I still have it somewhere in storage, but I always think about that. What was it about that film that made such an impression on you?
So I've always had a fascination with 70s music. My first favorite band was the Bee Gees, actually.
Okay.
Yeah.
I love the Bee Gees.
Yeah. And so when I first watched Almost Famous, like, I instantly fell in love with the music. That was a given, because I've always loved that. Because like I said, I've always loved music from the 70s. And so I think when it got to like talking about like Cream and Rolling Stone magazine, watching William throughout the film, I'm just sitting there like, okay, I'm pretty sure there's like girls who want to be more of like Penny Lane, but I'm out here like, and I'm thinking, I want to be William Miller.
I love the scene, like when William is given the records by his sister, you know, like she leaves, she splits, and that big pile of albums, and he's just going through the 60s and the 70s and Who's Next and Tommy and whatever else it is, and all just like the classic of just music that defined people's lives at that time. And that was just like the most beautiful scene of the whole movie. That was just for me. That was just like, wow. And I remember like watching the movie on the first night thinking like, this is going to be good during that scene. Cause it's pretty early in the movie when that scene happens. And I was like, I was just like, this is going to be good. Rock Under Fire podcast. I'm talking with writer and music journalist Bailey Avery. And I think having followed you on Twitter, I think I most associate you with something called Banded PR.
Yes.
I want to talk about that
okay.
A little bit. You are a Texas girl.
Yes, I am.
Is it Houston or Austin?
Yes, it's Houston.
Nice. I have a guest coming up in a few weeks. He does a Bruce Springsteen podcast, and he's from Dallas. I don't know too many people from Texas.
Yeah.
I know everybody I know in Texas moved to Texas from somewhere else, you know?
Yeah.
And here's the thing. And I don't know if you, as somebody that lives in Texas, right? I don't know if you can, maybe you can relate to this, maybe not. But if you're in a different state other than Texas, the perceived view of Texas, you hear the same thing over and over again. Austin is the place to be. How much truth is there to that? And like, is the music scene in, how's the music scene in Houston? How was it growing up? How is it now? Did you need to leave town to find good music? Did, you know, like what, give me some insight into that.
Okay. So I'm not all that familiar with the music scene here or the music scene in Austin, actually. I mean, I've been to Austin a few times in my life, and I do, and I can say, I'm sorry to any Houstonian who may be listening to this, but I prefer Austin over Houston all the way. And I actually, I have a few friends who do, who are in bands around, around Austin. And I can say that from what I've gathered from them and pretty much all of them, I guess you can say my insiders, my friends there, the music scene there in is definitely incredible. I don't know, I'm sad to say that I do not know much about the Houston scene. I'm trying to get to where I am like a little bit more familiar with it, but I'm just like not all that familiar with it yet. But I have heard so many great things in that about Austin, and especially the kind of stuff I've heard from the bands that I'm friends with there, and above all,
I hear the same thing. I mean, I know nothing about it. I have a friend who moved out to, he would just talk about, he spent her childhood in early 20s talking about how lame and boring New Jersey was. I'm going out to San Francisco, man. He went out to San Francisco, lived there for about 20 years, and out of nowhere, he packed up and split to Austin, Texas from San Francisco.
You know, my goodness.
So, I mean, that told me, I learned a lot about Austin just through that move and through him. Do you, I mean, you, I know you do a lot of shows, right?
Yeah.
Do you need to travel far for shows, or do you get a lot of people coming into Houston? Obviously Houston's a major city. What am I talking about? You know?
I mainly go to shows around here, but I do travel for shows sometimes. I mean, I'm actually leaving in like 2 days to go see, this band that I'm friends with perform at a dive bar in a small Florida town. There's very few times I actually do travel for concerts and stuff like that. And sometimes if it involves friends, then I'm dead set. I'm going, because there's a lot of times where the bands that I'm friends with that are out of state, they don't come here that much. I mean, Houston is basically like hit or miss when it comes to live music in general. I mean, I've said this before on Twitter and a couple other places, but I always feel like Houston gets like small, like little breadcrumbs when it comes to getting a band that I enjoy and love to come to Houston.
Right.
Because it's always Austin or Dallas, or sometimes San Antonio too, that gets to like made in major tours. And I'm just sitting here like, Houston is such a big city though. It's so rare. It's almost rare that a band or artist that I like actually comes here nowadays.
Yeah, it's like all of the major acts, all of the major label groups and artists pass through on every major tour, Dallas and Houston. But the bands you like, you have to go out into like, I don't know. You know what I'm talking about, right? You have to do some traveling, right?
Yes, you have to do some traveling.
But I mean, you know, as far as I'm sure you don't underestimate Houston on like the big picture, because Houston is a major city. It's viewed as a major city. When you think of Texas, when you hear about Texas outside, and maybe I'm just giving my New Jersey opinion, my own New Jersey perspective. When you hear Texas, it's Dallas and Houston. And Austin, you know, I would say Austin is kind of third. And this is, again, this is just my own perspective.
Yeah.
And San Antonio, I would say, would be fourth in terms of popularity outside of Houston.
Yeah. I've seen that. I'm pretty much
And now, how would you correct that if you had to?
Honestly, I can't correct that because I see that online too, and I'm just like, because for a long time I thought like, you know, like, oh, Austin like be like the most talked about Texas City because, well, it's the capital of Texas, and also the music scene, because I usually see people talk about the music scene, and then I hear people like, oh, I mainly hear about Dallas, and I'm just like, really?
Yeah, but when you tell people where you're from, at least you don't have to deal with where, who, where.
Yes,
I never heard of it. Like my town is like barely even on the map. You know? There was a record store called Vintage Vinyl, which like a lot of people would come from out of state, and they would do a lot of business online. So people in Europe knew about Vintage Vinyl, but it's the only place that put us on the map. And they closed a few years ago. They were around for like 40 years. Would you say, do you like writing about concerts more or like record reviews? Like if you have to do some sort of a writing project, are you into doing live reviews or reviews of new material?
That's a good question, actually. I never thought of that before, but I think like in terms of writing, I prefer to write about music and new releases. I've written about live shows before, but sometimes I feel like I struggle with finding a good description when it comes to kind of concerts that I can write about. So, you know, so usually I prefer more to write about some of like my new favorite releases in music and stuff like that. So it's very rare that I actually write about concerts and stuff.
I find it's almost like, and I've only done a few of them. I think I've only done like one or two concert reviews. And I found like the structure is always the same. There's only so much you could talk about.
Yes.
How was the energy in the room, the energy between the crowd and the artist? What was their set list? You know, who, I don't know, like the idea. And I know people that do it. I know people that do it for a living. You know, where they're constantly on the scene somewhere and you have to report back from some event, you know, about the show and have it in by X amount of hours. And then it's up online the next day, you know. One of my bad habits is like talking about my own stuff on my own show. But I a couple episodes back, I posted this thing called The Feast, and it was an episode, but it really wasn't an episode. What it was me reading from my last book, which is, it's a novel. And I think a lot about the psychological aspects of music and like the power and effects that it has on our memories.
Yeah.
You know, where music can put you back in a certain time or place in your life, you know. What's your first, this is going to be a totally random question. What's your first musical memory? What's like the earliest thing you can remember about hearing and liking something? Or maybe it was something you didn't like.
Okay, so the earliest I remember is, so I have a cousin who used to babysit me all the time along with her friends, and she's 7 years older than me, and so she grew up in the like late 90s at the MTV era, and so I remember when she and her friends would babysit me, I would sit with them and watch MTV playing these different music videos from everything from like, well, of course, not a lot of rock on there, but Backstreet Boys, Britney Spears, all that. And I guess you can say like that's like the main like earliest memory I have. I mean, I always had music playing in house. Like I do remember like a little bit of me listen. Like I said earlier, the Bee Gees was my first favorite band. I remember a little bit.
That's so awesome, though. That's so cool.
Yeah.
I feel compelled to ask you how and why, but I won't, you know, if you want to share why, but I don't want you to get too far off track of where you were already going, but that's awesome.
Yeah. And some other memories I have from around that period. So my mom always tells me that whenever she played artists like Beyonce and Jennifer Lopez, I would actually cry like not happy crying, like full on sad crying. I was listening to that music. But when I'd listen to like artists like Matchbox 20 or Nickelback,
dude, Beyonce would make you cry.
Yes, literally, like Beyonce and Jennifer Lopez. No, their music. Like, I guess I just like didn't really. I guess when I was really little, I didn't really like pop music that much. And so, my mom always tells me that I would cry whenever she played those artists on the radio. But then when I listened to like artists like Matchbox 20 or Nickelback, even I wouldn't cry. I would just like listen to it and just kind of like just kind of jam along to it. I'm like, okay, I guess I was leaning towards rock even when I was little.
There's that whole aspect of music where like there's the music that you know you willingly listen to, right?
Yeah.
You play it on your own because you like it, right? And then there's that music from childhood that we really have no say in the matter. We have no choice. We have to hear it anyway because some adult is playing it.
Yes. Or it's
on the radio, right? Radio was still a thing back then, right?
Yes, it was still.
And it hasn't, like, I know it's like really hasn't been very relevant in the last decade or two, but is there any music that you hated as a kid and like now you like that you like changed your opinion on?
None I can think of, because I'm still not that big of a fan of Beyonce or Jennifer Lopez.
I used to teach guitar in the Boys and Girls Club in Jersey City, and I would do a talent show during the school year, and I would do a talent show during the summer camp, and all of the girls would fight over who got to sing "I Was Here." So, and I had to learn the guitar of that. I did an acoustic guitar version of that. So as you can imagine, I heard the song in my sleep for about 3 years, you know, like every year that became our theme song. That became the song we closed out the show with. That became the feel good showstopper at the end.
That's what I think
of when I think of Beyonce. Tell me about Banded, how you got involved with it.
Okay, so I started out as a pop culture writer for a website called The Things a few years ago. And so I was about a few months in, which is like around the time like COVID started getting worse. And so my boss sent a message to our group chat saying that they were getting rid of the feature writing team that I was on. So I was just like, oh shit, I need to find something new and quick. So I was looking for like all these different, jobs. I was looking for paying, which there wasn't really that many options unless, of course, like I had a degree or something, and I didn't. And so, And so even my boss, Rebecca, like she tagged me in some stuff, trying to help me out a little bit. And then, one day she posted on her story saying that she was looking for contributors and not contributors for Band of PR. And so she listened to email and I was like, okay, I guess I can go for this. And so I emailed her and instantly I was in. And
nice.
Yeah. So that's where my relationship with Banded began.
Awesome. I saw a few of her interviews. When I was checking out the YouTube page,
yeah,
for Banded PR. All right, so tell me about, or don't, if you don't want to talk about it, I don't know. Fangirl to Music Industry Pipeline. Is this a project of yours, or I've seen this in print around your name. You know how many, I can't tell you how many times I've seen it, but like, you know, when you're on social media and you follow so many people and you scroll past something and you kind of see that you don't really notice it every time, or it kind of, you see it out of the corner of your eyes. And I've often wondered like what that is. Is that something you're working on, or?
That's something that I actually did. Like, I did a little over a year ago. Well, it was published nearly a year ago. It was a project that I started doing in September of 2021. I had read this book called Fangirls, and it's by this author named Hannah Ewens. I think that's how I don't know how to pronounce her last name. But I got the book off Amazon. I got like within like a day, and then I was just like, I just read through that book so quick, and I started thinking of like my own experiences as a fangirl, because it wasn't until high school that I really started getting into like pop music that was popular, which was like 10 years ago. And so I started thinking of my own like fangirl experiences, not through the pop artists that I did like really enjoy at that point in time. And so, and I started thinking of the fact that I was a fangirl first and then a music industry professional. And I know so many people who were fangirls first and then turned into a music industry professional. So I was just like, what if I turn this fangirl to music industry pipeline into a project? So I started detailing everything, like my plans and everything, on like different Facebook groups, and just telling like, hey, I'm doing this thing about the fangirl to music industry pipeline. If you want to participate in this, just email me and we can like have your story emailed to me, or we can do a Zoom call, something like that. And I'll run it and I'll write it up and have it up. And so there were so many people who reached out to me, which like that was I was not expecting the response I got. I think I probably got like 50 emails or so. Regarding that, I was just like, whoa, this is going to be bigger than I thought it was going to be. So, and I took a bit of a break from it for probably like a couple months. But then I got back on track and just wrote everything up. And then March of last year, I finally published it, and was met with such incredible response. Like, people were sharing it, people were loving it. And one of the people that I had not a part of this project that is actually now one of my friends that I met through this project, her name is Jasmine. She's actually like a music industry commentary person on YouTube, and so she has a bit of a following from that. And
nice.
So now, because of her because of the fan base that she has, that's kind of what led to the response that I got from it. And I was just sitting there like, oh my god, this is the biggest thing that I have ever done in my writing career.
How can I see it? How did you publish it? Is it an article? Is it a book?
Yeah, it's on Bandit's website, actually. I'll have to find that. I'll send it to you on Twitter.
I've wondered about it because I was reading a while ago, I was reading an interview that you did. And this is just prior to contacting you when I was seeing, okay, who would be interesting to talk to? Were you doing like fan sites initially?
Yes, I was.
That's the way I understood it. So I just wanted to make sure, if you're like talking to somebody, like an interview or something, like some piece on a band or an artist, like, do you find it easier? Let me see if I could actually restructure this question. What do you find tougher? Talking to artists and or bands that you already know or like or are a fan of, or somebody that you're not that familiar with that you kind of have to research? What is a tougher thing for you to do?
Oh, that's a good question. So I'd say both, basically. I mean, I don't do interviews that often because I'm actually a very shy person, and I have a bit of a stuttering problem, as I've probably just seen a few times.
Hello. So do I. If you ever listen to any of my shows,
Yeah. So yeah. And yeah. So with that, I just don't do interviews that often. I mean, that was like the first thing I ever did as a music journalist. Like, I was mainly doing interviews for a while because I actually forgot to mention this. The first music journalism thing I ever did was for a website called Unhinged, but they're no longer in business. So yeah. So I did I think 3 interviews with them. And then probably like a few months later, they were just like, we're shutting down. I'm just like, wrapped. I mean, but I already had Bandit as well, so I wasn't scrambling around the same way I did after I lost my pop culture writing job. And so Interviews with Bandit, like that's just something I don't do very often. I mean, the last time I did an interview was September of 2021, I think. Yeah, so it's been a bit of a long time, and I'd say like in a like even with the, I've interviewed bands or artists I was already friends with, because those were like to me those were the easiest ones to me because I already know the person. But even then, like it was still like hard because I'm just because I feel like I always felt like I can never come up with like that one good question and maybe like maybe second guess my interviewing abilities, which is why which is big reason why I haven't done them in so long. And
it's always trial and error. That's like that's the bottom line. You know, I've been learning the hard way so many times with it, you know.
Right.
I cringe when I listen to myself. I'm probably gonna cringe listening to this, but my like the questions I'm asking you or the way I'm phrasing whatever, but no. But it's definitely would you say like research? Are you like a researcher, like sit here and dig into people's past and like think like base questions off of previous interviews and things like that?
Yeah, I do that a lot actually. Like I'll go listen to like if they appeared on a podcast or something, I'll go listen to that and trying to like scoop up a little bit more, or or I'll go on YouTube and listen to an interview, or I'll find a publication that they're in of any kind and just try and gain inspiration from them. And I'm trying, whenever I do interview, I try and keep it to at least around 10 questions, because I was, because I felt like, and then that's a good amount of questions for an interview. So I don't know. So I'd sit there for probably like a few hours trying to think of 10 good questions for an artist. And it can be like really difficult. Like sometimes like I don't even like finish coming up with everything I want to say until maybe like 2 hours before an interview. Yeah.
Dude, that makes me self-conscious. This makes me self-conscious because I don't like count like questions, but I have a general idea of how many I have. But it's like I said, I always try to do like a conversational approach and like somewhere find questions to throw in there. I don't know if that makes sense, but
that does.
It's like, all right, I should ask something at some point, you know? Here's something I want to ask you about.
Okay.
Or talk about. I don't know if I have a question in here, but let's talk about Greta Van Fleet.
Okay.
It's safe to say you're a fan.
Yes, I am a fan.
All right. So, as you know, I'm a dinosaur. It's not that I don't like newer music. I'm just not exposed to it. You know, I grew up very certain era, and it's just the like when you get into, I guess, like when you get into your 30s, and I think like a lot of people, if you ask a lot of people who are over 30 or 40, like when did you stop caring about new music, or when did new music stop really grabbing you the way a lot of people say, for some reason, 32, 33.
Yeah. Like I mean, I get that. I mean, I'm 25, but mm-hmm. I actually got to that point when I was maybe in my late teens, because that's when I really stopped caring about newer music for a bit. But I think like when I really started getting back into like newer music was when Greta Van Fleet did come around, and also when I did get my Bandit gig a couple years after that fact, and because I was being introduced to more and more like newer rock artists, because we have this thing in our little thing called Slack. And so my boss, Rebecca, she always sends in these little requests that get sent to her. And so we'll listen to them, and if we like them, we'll claim it. And there's so many artists that I've been introduced to because of that. And so so I find myself getting very invested in learning more and more about new rock music, especially like the ones like you never hear on the radio, of course. And
I think that's most the case with most bands these days.
Yes, yeah.
It's like it's like one of the things I always talk about, which has always been like the underlying elephant in the, of the elephant in the room, what they say, so to speak, you know, like the hard subject to talk about, that the harsh reality is that rock music is no longer the center of the culture or the pop cultural zeitgeist, right? It at one point kind of reflected the state of the world, right? And it kind of informed how people dressed and fashion trends and all that stuff. And so hearing your perspective, one of the things that I always get self-conscious about are the people that are listening saying, oh, bullshit. You know, like there's so much great music out there, you know, you have to look for it, right?
Yeah.
I grew up with everything around me. It came to me. I don't want to look for it.
Right.
So it's like somewhere in between. I need to stand somewhere in between, you know, and it was one of the reasons I wanted to talk to you, because you have that, again, that fresh perspective. And, you know, I mean, I'm clueless with the stuff that's out there. So you scared me for a second when you said, well, I'm 25 now. I stopped caring about new music when I was about 18, 19. I'm like, no, wait a second. No, you're the new music girl. Wait a second. Like I noted that when I was scrolling Twitter, you know?
Yeah. I started caring again when I started working for Banded. Because there was that period where I was not caring.
Okay, so which leads me to Greta Van Fleet, because yes. I did about 4 years ago when the EP was, when everybody went nuts over the EP before the first album came out, right? 2018, mm-hmm. The end of 2017 it was this time of year in 2018 when I was like, I wouldn't say I was preaching the EP, but I was like, holy shit. Like, these guys are for real. Like all of the hype, they deliver on it, man. Like, you got to hear this. Like, no, seriously. Like, listen to this band. So, you know, as I'm sure you know and remember, the big comparison inevitably was Zeppelin.
Yes. Right? Yeah.
And I heard it. And I was like, yeah, I hear it. You know, I hear Zeppelin, you know, I hear, you know, you can see the mannerisms when he's on stage.
You can definitely see that, see the influence in that. I've always thought that, but I don't know. Yeah. I don't know.
Let me ask you this. Like, what was it about the sound that pulled you in? Like, where were you just prior to hearing Greta Van Fleet? Where were you musically, and how different was it? Similar to what you were already listening to? Was it something totally out of the box? And you said, "Holy shit, this is better than what I was listening to." Like, what was? Bring me back to the moment you discovered them.
Okay, so it was one random night. I was supposed to go to a concert to see a band I like called Haim, but I ended up getting sick. So I was bored at home and nothing to do. So I went on YouTube and Highway Tune was in my recommendations. And so I was just like, this seems interesting. So I listened to it and I was just like, holy fuck. I don't think I ever heard anything like this in terms of new rock before. Because like the main new rock people that I grew up on, which of course, like I said, like I like Nickelback, I like Matchbox 20. And those are like probably like the main ones and Three Doors Down. But I didn't completely get into rock and roll until I was like 12. And I started getting into the Runaways, which is like my introduction to rock and roll. Cause I saw the biopic about them when I was 12. And so I started getting into Joan Jett because of that, Leah Ford, Guns N' Roses, pretty much everything else in between at that age. And so I was a huge, I've been a huge like rock enthusiast for a long time, basically. And I wasn't really all that familiar with like new rock other than the ones I grew up with and some other like newer bands at the time. Like I really liked Kings of Leon and Sinna. So, and when Greta Van Fleet came around, I was 20. And so when I first heard them, I thought it was just so refreshing for new rock. And then I'd like, I just like was looking them up and I just like I underestimated just like how popular they actually like were getting at that point. And I was just like, could these guys be the band that brings rock and roll back to not rock and roll back to popularity? And I like to think that they have done just that, because now you see like bands like Måneskin and other stuff like that bringing rock and roll back to popularity. And so with that, like, that's just kind of like what drew me in. That was like the first like major like new rock band that I had enjoyed in quite a long time. And to me as a young 20-year-old who loved rock music, it felt so refreshing for me to hear, and it gave me hope for the future of rock and roll.
Yeah, that was the moment when I heard them. You know, I heard all of the comparisons to Zeppelin, and yeah, I could hear it.
But yeah,
there was something else going on, and I didn't realize this until a few weeks ago, because I went 3 full years without listening to them. And yeah, you know, when the second album came out, which I think of as their third album, because I grew up in the 70s and 80s, and that EP of theirs is actually the length of an LP in the 70s. You know what I mean? So I think of that EP as their first album, you know?
Yeah, I could definitely see that. I mean, I view that as their first album as well. Like, yeah. I never viewed it as just an EP. And when Anthem of the Peaceful Army came out, the second one, I was just like, I see people say like, oh, this is like their first album. I'm like, this is actually,
yeah, I don't know. I don't buy that.
Second one.
Right. So when Battle came out, I was like, I heard it once. Right. And it didn't do anything for me. So I was just like, at this point, like, are they? All right. Let me back up. So I did a podcast episode on Greta Van Fleet, where we asked the very question that you just pretty much answered about 5 minutes ago, where, you know, you think that, okay, they're the band that's going to bring rock back. And again, rock never really went anywhere. It's always, it's kind of been on the fringes for the last 15 years.
Yeah. Because when I was describing like the bands that I did enjoy, and like I mentioned, I like Kings of Leon. Like I always felt like there was only that like small bit of crumbs that just only if a rock had just appeared on the radio maybe like once in a lifetime in the 2010s.
Yeah. And then when you get into that band that becomes your favorite band, right? There's something that you instantly connect with, and it's like, wow, they kind of just like speak the musical language that you're feeling, right? That you were unable to express like with any other artist, right? So think about all the bands and artists of your lifetime that they were your favorite at one time, right? And have you noticed those little details that kind of inform why a certain band becomes your favorite band, while at the same time an ex-favorite band suddenly is no longer your favorite band?
There's really like no bands that like come to mind specifically, because like every band that I've ever gotten into are still bands that I say like I have not like I don't just like say like this band is my favorite band. I have a list of like I have a list of favorite bands, like a full list, and
this is my 40 favorite bands.
Yes.
We did that here too. So
yeah. There's really never been that band I actually ever lost interest in per se. Like every band that I've ever found myself getting into, like even like when I was a kid to like my preteen, my teen years, even now in adulthood, like I just never found myself actually like actively like losing interest in them. I'll always go back and like there'd be points where I don't listen to them for a period of time, but I never like got rid of them as like one of my favorite bands per se. And so like I still like go back and like go on like binge listens to the bands I do enjoy, and like every once in a while. So yeah, like I never, I'm like I said, never actually lost interest in any of the bands that I've ever cited as my favorite before. So, yeah,
good. That's actually a good thing.
Yeah.
Sometimes, like, if I have to, like, I've thought about this question myself, where, like, sometimes I think, like, okay, maybe like that one favorite band stops evolving in a way that you once connected with initially. You know, like they get to their third or fourth album and then it becomes something else, right? And they're like, okay, you're like, okay, this is not what I hoped they would be. You know, I liked them 5 years ago, but, you know, and then some other band comes along that kind of fulfills that need, that musical need of connection that, you know, was one that the other band, you kind of lost in that other band. So I was just wondering that because there are a few bands like that for me, you know?
Yeah.
There's, like I said, I was a kid. I loved Judas Priest when I was in my teens, 13, 14 years old. Now it's like, I can't stand anything they've done in the last 30 years. So go figure.
Right. And you know? I mean, like pretty much like with like the older bands that I do enjoy, like I mainly just listen to like the older stuff. I mean, like I was saying before, like what got me interested in rock and roll completely was when I saw the biopic about the Runaways. And then after that, it just let me get into like artists, like of course, Joan Jett, who was in the Runaways. And I also got interested in David Bowie and Sex Pistols and all that at 12 years old. And so for my, one thing I'm thinking of right now, like for my 13th birthday, I asked my dad for a Joan Jett CD and he loved Joan Jett in his teen years. And so he got it. So he bought me a greatest hits CD of Joan Jett and the Black Hearts. And he downloaded that onto my iPod after I got that. And I probably spent my entire summer just listening to that again and again. And pretty much to this day, Joan Jett and the Blackhearts, still one of my top favorites.
Was it a compilation of good stuff, or was it an
album? Yeah, it was basically a compilation of the good stuff and also her singing like all the snuts, her singing some songs from the Runaways. And so so I was listening to that and I was just listening. I was just like, oh my God, this is good. I still thank my dad to this very day for getting me that for my birthday.
Yeah, that's a great gift, man. That's a great gift. Yeah, I saw her a few times live. Actually, I saw she did a free show at Coney Island a few years back. But you know what's funny is I had no idea that the Runaways even existed until like I was in my teens. Like when Bad Reputation came out, I remember my uncle had the 8-track. There were these things called 8-tracks, right? I've heard of them. So, and I was just, oh, this is this new singer named Joan Jett. I was about 11, right? I was 10 or 11. 1981, 81, I was 11. All right, so... yeah, here's this new singer named Joan Jett. I had no idea about the Runaways. And then kind of like later on, I learned about them. But it took me forever to even hear the Runaways. Because back then, all there was like record stores. And there was no streaming. And there was no YouTube. And it was like you couldn't just readily find the Runaways. It was like this legendary group that you heard of that were like no longer in print. You couldn't find their albums in the stores. You know, like that's the way it was. And then it wasn't until much later... that's awesome.
Yeah.
Where do you see it all going? I know that's an unfair hypothetical question. Like, you know, like at this point, you have people that are like, you know, champion new rock music, are very hopeful for the future. And then you have like, it's my generation. And I realize it's my generation, it's Gen X. They get become like real crotchety old men. Like, I can't tell you, I can begin to tell you how many people I know, just my Facebook friends, who were ripping apart Greta Van Fleet for the same exact reasons that the critics were praising them. You know what I mean? For the same reason. Like, oh, they sound like Zeppelin. They're copying Led Zeppelin. Like, no, listen, they're not. Yes, they're influenced by Zeppelin and the mannerisms and the little nuances in the music. Like, you know, like that the guitarist once said, very early on. He's like, man, I listened to so much Jimmy Page that I've learned to think like him, you know? Yeah. And it, like, you're not, if at that point, it doesn't become imitation or parody or copying. It becomes channeling, right? When you can think like you've absorbed something so much that it just gets in your DNA, you become it. Yeah. Does that make sense, right? So
that does make sense.
I don't look at them as copying Zeppelin. I don't either. As channeling the same energy of Zeppelin and channeling the same musical conversation that Zeppelin had with itself and its albums and Zeppelin 1 versus Zeppelin 2 and Zeppelin 3. And then out of nowhere, man, they do Houses of the Holy, right? And it's like, where did this come from? Like, they're suddenly trying reggae and they're suddenly trying like prog, you know, like No Quarter and things like that. So
yeah,
I'm wondering, and maybe you've seen it already, and I'm sure you know it better than me, because I haven't really fully absorbed Greta Van Fleet's last album. Do you see much evolution in their sound at this point, two and a half albums in, or are they kind of still in that beginning phase, would you say?
I'd say that they definitely have evolved in the last like 5 to 6 years. And I remember when Battle Gardens Gate came out, me and my boss, a bandit, and the rest of the bandit staff, like, we did like a virtual listening party for that album. And we all came to agreement that they really have evolved, like, from the first like two albums. And it really impressed us. And like, I wouldn't, and that's the thing, like, that's one thing I look for with bands. Like, I always hope that they'll like evolve and grow in them. In sound, and I really saw a lot of growth from Greta Van Fleet in that third album alone. And so I think, like, you know, in the years to come, and when they release more and more records, they're definitely gonna even evolve more now, more and more as time goes.
Good. That's good. There are only a few bands that can get away with not evolving.
Yes.
You know what I mean? That have that signature sound.
Yes.
Can just like write the same song over and over and over again and do it right, you know, and do it like to the point where like they always sound like, I'm thinking like offhand, I'm thinking of like AC/DC. They wrote the same song for 50 years and they do it great. It's a great song. There's not many that can get away with it. You know,
I'd rather see
like somebody evolve. But the point is that like my generation is like, oh, you know, like it was once great and it's not great anymore. Grow up, man. Like Led Zeppelin at one point were young. They were 18, they were 19. They were ripping off dead blues artists, you know. They made a career, they got famous ripping off dead blues artists, man. There weren't like 60 and 70 year olds in 1968 cursing Led Zeppelin for ripping off dead blues artists.
You know?
And why are we doing it to Greta Van Fleet?
Yeah.
Can you envision a time in the future when rock will one day become the center of pop culture again, the way it once was, or has that ship sailed? And if not, are you okay with that? Are you okay with rock remaining solely on the fringes? Because lots of people are, apparently.
Yeah. I can see it, and I can actually see it coming back on top. Like, now that we got these, like, some of these new bands that are leading in popularity in rock music nowadays. However, like, if that ship really has sailed, that's okay, because you don't need the popularity in order for it to be good,
right?
You know, basically, and so you know, and these bands will have all these like dedicated fans who are listening to them and rooting for them and hyping them up every step of the way.
Right. And it's good in a sense that when this generation of like the first few generations of rock, like that first generation of founding fathers who are all gone now, I think, like Chuck Berry and all that, Little Richard. And then a second generation of rock and roll, like the Beatles and the Stones and Bob Dylan and The Who and all of them, Zeppelin, right? And then the next generation, like they're all in their, like, they're all on their farewell tours now, you know?
Yeah.
So when, like, in 5 years, think about that. Like, I always think about, like, what's going to happen to the concert industry when 5 years from now, and definitely 10 years from now, all these acts are going to be gone. You know, because they're all like late 70s now, early 80s, some of them already 80. Paul McCartney's 80 already, you know?
Yeah.
So like 10 years from now, I hope they're still living, but I don't see them doing it into their 90s. So when all of the major tours and all of the big venues, like stadiums and arenas, are all being sold out by people over the age of 60. Mm-hmm. What happens to the concert industry when, like, they have this big hole, this massive void in rock concerts, right? So it's the good thing is that you can go see a lot of these bands in clubs now. You know, you can still see them in clubs. God forbid Greta Van Fleet is playing Giant Stadium next year. You know, it's like, what's...
Yeah.
And then you'll be able to say, well, I remember when I could go see Greta Van Fleet for like $50. Now I have to pay $500 to see them, you know, at Texas Stadium or something like that.
Right.
I mean, they're playing where the Dallas Cowboys play. You know?
Yeah. I mean, the last time I saw Greta Van Fleet concert was 2021, and I actually won my concert tickets to see them. And so it was actually in Nashville. So I traveled to Nashville to go see them. It was at a brand new outdoor venue, and the last time I saw them before that was at a really small, I think like college hockey arena in New Orleans. And so now, like, I see them like selling out these huge places, and I'm just like, I remember when I saw them at a college hockey arena.
I remember like one of my predictions, and I don't think they did this yet. Correct me if I'm wrong. I don't think they, because I know my area and I know like the, you know, Madison Square Garden. I predicted in 2018, and maybe the pandemic, I used the pandemic as my excuse for being wrong. I said Greta Van Fleet will be headlining Madison Square Garden in 2 years. That was in 2018. Now, 2020, 2 years later, was the pandemic. Everything got shut down.
Yeah.
I don't think they've played the Garden yet, but I know they have played on, they're playing on an arena level now.
Yeah, they are
in a lot of states. So
yeah,
I mean,
I don't think it's going to be long before they announce a show.
Careful what you wish for. Careful what you wish for, though, because like I said, there was like Led Zeppelin in the 70s. Like if you lived in Texas, you would have had to go to the Astrodome or like, you know, the Cotton Bowl to see Led Zeppelin.
Oh yeah,
you know. So it was like that's the difference between how many people are going to concert, like rock concerts then versus now. And that's the part that concerns me, you know, like I fear for rock in the sense that the festivals, like a lot of these bands that don't get the exposure that they deserve, right? And they don't get recognized, that are playing most of like 99.9% of the year in clubs. And then they get on festivals and it's like their only chance to get a lot of people seeing them, you know? And I'm like, somebody said to me once, well, like, look how big rock is. Look at all the festivals. I said, I don't know if that's necessarily a good thing, because when these bands are not on festivals, the majority of these bands are playing in small places. Like they need to be seen and heard. So the festivals are great in that respect. So, I mean, that's hopeful. I see a lot of hope in that, but
yeah, because I have so many friends who do work at like these rock music festivals, and I'll look in and I'll see a band or so in the lineup that I never even heard of, and one I have heard of, but I know that does not get a lot of exposure, and I'll just think, who knows? Maybe this festival will give them the exposure that they rightfully deserve.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
As you know, I'm clueless about most music post 2001. When I see critics at the end of the year saying, oh, my top 25 albums of 2021, like I honestly, like, and I'm not exaggerating, and this is like, and I'm not proud of this as somebody that, you know, does a music podcast. I don't know if I can name 25 albums that I like in the 21st century. And that's not a good thing. And it's not because I don't really like it. It's just I don't know where to go. You know, I was raised on an infrastructure that was based on radio and being out in the go out and buy tangible product and bring that record back home and have the line right. Open up the gatefold sleeve, you know. And
yeah.
The last band I truly loved was The Strokes. And their first album was 2001, you know, and I still love The Strokes. But tell me who's hot right now. Like if Martians land on Earth 50 years from now and they ask, what was rock like in the 2020s? Yeah. What artists do they check out?
Right now I'm thinking of Måneskin. That's, I think that like they're pretty much like the main big band in rock right now, other than Greta Van Fleet. Like they're the first like one I really saw taken off in the early 2020s. And that was like after they won this I think it's called Eurovision. It's like some sort of like singing show, I think, in Europe. And so after that, their music really started taking off. They were getting like millions and millions of followers. And they're one of those people that are really selling out shows right now. They just released a new album. They're pretty much one of the big main rock acts, like I said, that's popular right now. So when I think of like rock artists that are taking over in the 2020s right now, it's them. They're incredible. They're one of my favorites. And so I definitely say like that's the main one. And of course Greta Van Fleet is the other one. And
I'm hearing a lot about Dirty Honey.
Oh yes, Dirty Honey.
I'm hearing a lot about
them. I have
friends my age who like that band.
I'm a huge fan of them. They're definitely another band that are also taking over. Another band I think of is, I've been a fan of this band since I was like 13, so about like over 10 years. They're called the Pretty Reckless. The lead singer, Taylor Momsen, she is incredible.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
I know her. Not personally, but I heard of her. So.
Yeah, and they released this album a couple years ago called Death by Rock and Roll, which was, like, it's probably my favorite album of the 2020s by far. Like they have all these collaborations with the surviving members of Soundgarden and Tom Morello.
Wow, I love Tom Morello.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, I had no idea about this.
I'd say that's one album that I think everyone should listen to at least once and, like, get a good taste of current rock and roll. Because that album, like I said, it's definitely my favorite of the 2020s by far. And it's one that I'll always recommend, not for anyone looking to listen to new rock artists and new rock music.
Now that you said that, I'm trying to, while you were talking about that and you said a couple times, my favorite album of what'd you say, 2020s?
Yes. It just came out like 2 years ago.
I'm like trying to think like... My favorite record of the 2020s isn't even a rock artist. She's a pop artist. Her name is Marina. Marina and the Diamonds.
Oh, I was obsessed with her music when I was in high school.
Really?
Oh my God.
That's so crazy. Nobody knows who she is unless I like.
I used to go on this website called Tumblr a lot in high school, and I used to find a lot of music from that music through there. And Marina and the Diamonds is definitely like one of my top favorites when I was in high school. I've seen her in concert once, and she was phenomenal. And I've listened to her first couple albums pretty much almost on a regular basis when I was like 14, 15, 16. And then I'd say that like she was like a huge part of my high school soundtrack. So it makes me happy that you brought her up just now.
Yeah. And it's like, you know, I'm trying to think of the name of the album, but it's like my favorite album of like the new decade. you know, and ancient something in the modern world. It's got Venus flytrap on it and man's world. And it's, oh my God, it's just like pure pop bliss. And it's like, why isn't this huge? You know,
right.
I remember like when Man's World came out, I was like, this is going to be so big. Like, this is like the, you know, and it wasn't. It's a dangerous song because it's like, so it's like almost like too catchy.
Oh,
it's almost
I
too catchy, if that's possible, you know?
Yeah.
So I have to be careful with that, because if I hear it, then it stays in my head for the next 5 days. So
yeah, that's up to me too.
I've been talking to Bailey Avery. Bailey, what websites can listeners go to find out about you or your work or any projects that you might be plugging?
Banyan PR all the way.
Okay. Banyan PR. Is it .com, .net? Is it
.com.
All right. So BanyanPR.com. You know, I wish you the best in
Thank you very
work.
Much.
And with Banded, I love the idea of it. I love what Rebecca is doing. She seems to have a great group. Bailey, this has been fun. This has been enlightening for me, because I'm so used to surrounding myself with, like I said earlier, like-minded people of the dinosaur species.
And, yeah.
So as you can imagine, it's often necessary for me to leave my comfort zone and get a fresh perspective. So thank you for the time. Thank you for the chat. I hope you're right about rock and roll. So,
thank you for having me. It's been a lot of fun.
Absolutely. Peace, love, rock and roll.